You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
It was a crash course because I was like, I want to find out the story of Cool Papa Bell, but you never know what's out there. And I get involved in reading a lot of things. So I look up, and just happenstance, this book came out a few years ago. And then I read about the author who died a few months before its release.
Right.
Which I didn't even know any of this. And listening to the book, which I really enjoy, but it's interesting because the introduction is like poetry. It's like, look, the legend is in there. There's some facts in there. We got some box scores, we got some legend, and it's like, it's gonna be all these type of things, but it's in there. Cool Papa Bell is in there, and you know, it's like, that's an interesting approach, you know, and the history isn't there in spots, but we have more of it now than we ever would have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, new stuff comes to light all the time. I mean, especially with players like Bell, you know, and you have a lot of baseball researchers who kind of specialize in Negro leagues and uncovering things. And it's funny because I kind of feel like if you're into baseball, if you're into the history of it and learning about it, I feel like there's never been a better time to kind of be into it. I just think that there's so many different avenues that you can kind of go down that you probably wouldn't have been able to go down before, you know, whereas you just have, you'd have like one or two books on a subject and, you know, maybe a firsthand account, but now it's like you have that times everything on the internet and, you know, interviews and all that stuff is just, you know, the tip of your fingers.
Yeah. And it's like data, information, and kind of like you can put out the fishnet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This is, Ken Vellante with Something Rather Than Nothing. And I got to tell you, I'm really excited. Got Greg Kreindler, painter who does a lot of depictions of historical baseball figures and portraits and scenes. Greg, great pleasure to welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for staying up late. Or I guess I'm staying up late.
Well, East Coast guy. Well, it's great to chat and fit in some time here to chat about, philosophy, art, baseball. It's all in your work. But prior to getting into the conceptual stuff and getting into all the different things you do with your painting, were you an artist when you were born?
That's a great question. Here's the thing. I started drawing when I was very young. I probably was, you know, seriously, quote unquote, seriously drawing when I was 3 or 4 or something like that. And I think I always kind of had I hesitate to use the word talent, but there was, you know, a little bit of a talent or a gift there that I guess kind of just gave me more of a natural proclivity to drawing.
Yeah.
But you know, I tend to think, now with talent and gifts and things like that, I really think that you can have that, but it's kind of up to you to kind of, you know, fan that flame and build on it. And that's kind of where you kind of shine. You know, it's like you only have so little of that gift and it's really in your hands the rest of the way. So I think in that sense, I think that somewhere inside of me, I was an artist, you know, when I was born. And I think I kind of, pulled it out of me, over 20, 30 years. I guess I'm still pulling it out of myself, trying to figure out where I am with it. But yeah.
Yeah, we on podcasts recently, I mean, there's certain themes that have come up and some of them have to do about kind of history or coming from artists or not having a history or connection to art and how you develop. But also, you know, as another matter, like you said, around, talent and, you know, having a proclivity or an ability and then whether you get to develop that or not, right? Whether it's cultivated, identified, cultivated and that. And it's great to hear, you know, how you recognize that, you know, something was there and, you know, looking to build on that. So, obviously we're going to get into the baseball stuff and we talked about as a primary piece of, you know, what you create, but were you always doing that when you were creating something or starting to paint when you were younger? I mean, was it, I'm going to, you know, put baseball together and painting and that's it for me? Or how did it develop with your subjects?
Well, so I grew up in the 80s and, you know, I was born in 1980. So, the first drawings that I remember doing were kind of, the cartoon characters that I was, you know, watching on television. You know, whether that was He-Man or G.I. Joe or Thundercats, stuff like that. You know, I remember my parents literally taping some of the episodes off of the television, and I would kind of play them back over and over again, and I would kind of pause them, you know, at this spot where you just had a, you know, a nice portrait of He-Man, or, you know, maybe him doing this, you know, heroic pose, and I would just sit in front of the television, and I would draw. And you mentioned before that you know, art was kind of, it was kind of a, it was cultivated. You know, I'm really lucky in the sense that I have two parents who were always very supportive of that. You know, they're always supportive of me being an artist or me drawing. You know, they took my brother and I to museums all the time and, you know, like Broadway shows. It's like, you know, we were getting cultured, and a lot of my friends weren't getting those same kinds of experiences that we were. So I'm very lucky in that sense. But the baseball thing, it started a couple of years later, I think, you know, when I was five or six or so. I discovered what was left of my father's baseball card collection. So he was born in 1944 and grew up in New York City. And he was collecting he was collecting baseball cards, I guess, in the late 40s, early 50s. And these were kind of like, you know, the Bowman and Topps issues of the day. And each card, I'd say maybe not each card, but for the most part, those sets were illustrated. They weren't necessarily done from photography. So I think when I discovered some of his baseball cards, I guess I noticed that. You know, I noticed that, let's say, the cards he had from the 40s or 50s or whatever were different from the cards he had, you know, from the 80s. Like, these were drawn, these were illustrated, these were painted. Yeah. So I think subconsciously something kind of clicked, and I thought that it was something that I could do, not, you know, not as a vocation, not as a job, not as a career, but, you know, maybe I could draw Mickey Mantle, you know, for my dad, because he loves Mickey Mantle. And, you know, I'd get like the proverbial pat on the head. Good job, son. Yeah. So I did that for a bit, and you know, still kind of, you know, just getting a little bit older and into different things. You know, I kind of like went through puberty and got into comic books and got really, you know, weird around girls, and you know, all of a sudden I'm like this kid who is not necessarily drawing all the time, but is kind of known for being an artist, for being a draftsman. Right. And I guess at the time I kind of figured I would do something as a career with it. I just didn't know what. And that was when I kind of learned about being an illustrator. I specifically kind of gravitated towards being a science fiction and fantasy book cover illustrator, because I've kind of always been in love with
those are great. Yeah.
With that stuff. Yeah. Like that visual storytelling, it's just the look of that. It's just right in my wheelhouse. And I went to the School of Visual Arts in Manhattan for college. And that was kind of like, that was where I was going to go. But you know, a couple of years into it, I was working my butt off, and it just, at some point I just realized that I didn't love doing that kind of subject matter. It didn't really, it didn't tug on my heartstrings the way that I thought it should. And it, everything kind of just became more of a struggle, became more of a struggle to do those paintings and to do that kind of work. So I floundered for a bit. You know, I still kind of worked on my, my technical chops, so to speak. And, you know, here I am, senior year of school, and I don't really know exactly what I'm going to do when I graduate, because I don't want to be a science fiction fantasy book cover illustrator anymore. I don't know what I want to paint. Mm-hmm. So I'm in class one day. This is kind of like my general portfolio class. And the teacher gives an assignment to everyone in the class to illustrate a relationship. And for whatever reason, the first thing that I thought of was the relationship between a batter and a pitcher. And, you know, all of a sudden, it's kind of like I went back to being a young kid again, looking at my father's baseball cards. And I ended up, you know, getting involved with research and you know, thinking, okay, let's make a painting of Mickey Mantle for my dad. You know, just be, it'll be just like it was when I was, when I was a young kid. And I made this painting and I absolutely loved it. I loved everything about it. Not the painting itself. I mean, I was happy with the painting, but the process of doing it, you know, the research that went into it, like everything, I don't want to say that it was effortless, but it just, it hit all of those notes that I wanted, I guess, art to hit for me.
Right.
And kind of, that's what it's been like for the past, this was 2002 that I did that painting at SVA. And basically I've been doing it since then. It's just been baseball. It's like that, that was kind of like the turning point where I realized that baseball is kind of where my heart is, and that's where I want to be.
Yeah. And I had actually, until you had brought up, I had actually forgotten about some of the older baseball cards, as you mentioned, being painted. And now I'm connecting it more how I've seen the type of representations that you have. I remember how it was a particular style even back then of painting the players. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Greg, is you talked about the research that's in your process, and I'd imagine you don't want to like get into all the details of the research, but one of the things I was wondering is, you have, what I've read about is kind of like a measured approach to like capturing the accuracy of like what's going on there, right? So like for our modern eyes with all the different colors and all this type of thing, but you have a photograph, but you're also trying to capture the color or how it looked. How does that happen? I've had a lot of great conversations with painters about color and things like that. What goes on right there? Because I think that has to be part of the magic in the universe that's right in there.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a big part of it for me, or a big part in, you know, in that attempt. because the majority of the work that I'm doing, it's baseball players that to most people kind of only exist in like this drab black and white world. So a lot of the photography that I work from is black and white. So the research that kind of goes into it, just from kind of like from a practical standpoint. So that kind of thing happens where I'm searching, I'm scouring, should I say, the internet, or I'm looking through my files. I'm trying to look for examples of, let's say, a specific jersey from a specific year. You know, what does the jersey look like? What color should the jersey be? You know, what color is the trim on the jersey? If it's a ballpark, you know, what did the ballpark look like this particular year? Because, you know, sometimes ballparks would be renovated, and the signage, the advertisements that you would see in a ballpark,
sure, yeah,
would usually change from year to year. So I would try to kind of focus on getting those details right, especially in color, because basically I have access to a lot of, whether it's kind of like color home movies or color photography, you know, just from, you know, 20 years of building like a library, chances are if it's from, you know, let's say the 1940s on up, I can usually find the proper color reference that I need to kind of, you know, imbue into the painting. But it kind of goes beyond that, in that I'm trying to kind of recreate a scene, and I'm, in doing so, not only do I need things to kind of be historically accurate with colors, but I have to kind of be aware of what is affecting these colors. And for me, that is kind of always involving light. So I have to kind of be conscious of how the light is going to affect the colors of these things in the particular piece that I'm making. So, you know, a sign might look complete, like a yellow, red, and blue sign might look completely different, you know, if it has sun shining on it, than it would say on kind of like an overcast day. And I think being sensitive to that sort of thing is part of, it's a big part of the process. You know, when I was in school, I did a lot of drawing and painting from life, which, you know, you tend to do in art school, you know, drawing and painting from a model all the time, or, you know, drawing and painting outside. And when I was doing it, it's kind of like I was doing it because I'm in a class and I'm trying to kind of just become a better painter, and I'm trying to learn how to paint, you know, quote unquote, realistically. But what I realize now is that I was kind of learning, I guess, why I was painting these things the way I was painting them, or why they looked the way that they looked. You know, why is painting a model that is being illuminated by like northern light, why is that different than painting a model that's being, you know, illuminated by sun, whatever.
Right.
So I had to take that kind of thinking and put that into the baseball stuff. So it's kind of like a mishmash of all of that, you know, with being accurate to the moment, you know, getting the light right, getting the, you know, the weather right, getting the temperature right, but also making sure that the colors of a particular jersey or scene or whatever are accurate to, you know, what actually existed, you know, making Mickey Mantle look like Mickey Mantle, making a 1955 jersey be, you know, as baggy as it needs to be compared to one from 10 years later.
Yeah.
So it's just like the minutia that, you know, like we were talking about before, the minutia that baseball fans and history lovers are really, really anal about.
Yeah. It's like you can't get enough of the information and more, you know, the rest of the story. Hey, right. Greg, I want, so I mentioned, you know, James Cool Papa Bell at the Negro Leagues, my favorite player. He's also a player who I never saw play. I've read about, and I've read the legends. I've heard the stories, all these different sources. And so I see your painting of James Cool Papa Bell and your connection to these depictions in the Negro Leagues, and I am floored. It's an amazing piece. And I say,
thank you.
What you're welcome. I say, what a work of art. But Greg, what is art? Like, for me, that all that's in there for me. You caught it. I'm like, that. It did it for me. But for you, what's art? What's going on there? What's going on?
What's art? Oh man, that's a tough one. You know, I never really thought about what art was or what art really meant to me. I never was really able to kind of articulate it. But I think with the kind of work that I do, you know, I'm trying to kind of communicate with people who are, you know, who are viewing the works, and I'm trying to kind of, this sounds corny, but it's true. I'm trying to elicit, you know, an emotional response. So, you know, I want the person to think of their, you know, mother and father, you know, bringing them to a game when they were five, or, you know, to think of, you know, what life was like in the 60s or whatever. It's, I feel like that's what art is to me. It's just something, you know, it doesn't have to be a painting or a visual thing. It's just, I feel like it's just something that is created and, you know, and elicits some sort of emotional response.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It's like such a broad, you know, definition, but, that's kind
of what I end up, you know, I think at a certain point too, a lot of times I end up talking about like healing, creation, processing, emotions, getting things out, the process, getting things out, the end result, getting things out, you know? So it is, a lot of the answers definitely get into that territory. I wanted to ask about, you know, and I encouraged all the listeners to check out, Greg's, all his paintings. But I wanted to reference back again to the Negro Leagues painting, and on the question of what I had mentioned about, you know, legend and lore and fact and all the deep social issues and exclusion and stardom and all the things that went on with Negro Leagues baseball. With that record being incomplete and with the kind of, you know, what's known, what isn't known, when you get to the point of like how you're trying to represent them, was that a more difficult problem to, or did you feel more responsible to try to extract that or bring that out with those paintings?
Well, I'm lucky in that I kind of knew where I was going with those paintings. I mean, all of them, they were commissioned by a collector who is actually based out in the Pacific Northwest, in Seattle, who is a big, he's a huge baseball fan, and he's very much into the Negro Leagues and Latin American leagues and whatnot. And it was really because of him that I took on that project. But I think what I set out to do when I first started painting these players, not Negro Leaguers specifically, but I just mean painting baseball players to begin with, I was always really concerned with depicting them in an honest way. And the whole idea, you know, that you mentioned, that we talked about a little bit with myth and legend in baseball, I do appreciate that is there, but that's not really the kind of stuff that I want to depict. So in a way, I like giving the viewer the opportunity to come to their own conclusion about the player. So I don't want to like take any of my whatever nonsense I have going on in my head and make a work of art or whatever that reflects that. So there's this story. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but this had a profound effect on me and kind of how I do this stuff. It's about Red Barber. And when Red Barber was told by Branch Rickey, I think it was in 1940, might have been in 47, or might have been in 45 when Robinson was actually signed by the organization. I don't remember. But anyway, Branch Rickey told Red Barber that Robinson was coming. And, you know, Red Barber was, you know, the play-by-play announcer for the Dodgers. So he was, you know, he was going to be talking about Robinson. And Red Barber, he grew up in the South, you know, he went to like segregated schools and, you know, you could say that he was kind of, I don't want to say that he was a bigot, but you know, he was a product of his time and he probably had, you know, misgivings about mm-hmm. Robinson coming over and kind of integrating the game. And he kind of had a hard time with that in the beginning. He had a hard time with, I guess being okay with the fact that he was going to be talking about Robinson. And he tells this story about recalling his first World Series that he covered, which was in 1935. And he, along with all of the other, you know, newspaper men and announcers that were covering the thing, they get called into the office by Kennesaw Mountain Landis, you know, who was the commissioner at the time.
Sure.
And Landis is saying, you know, that your job here is to report, you know, if somebody makes a bad play, then, you know, you are to talk about the play. You're not supposed to give your opinion about it, you know, and saying that, you know, this player made a dumb decision or, you know, boneheaded play or whatever. If a player, you know, comes up to me in the stands and spits in my face, you know, you are just to report and, you know, leave, I think the phrase was, you know, leave your opinions in your hotel room. And Barber says that when he remembered that, when he thought of that moment, he was able to kind of, I guess, be at peace with the fact that he was going to kind of talk about Robinson and, you know, kind of go through his conversion. And that's kind of how I look at my work and what I try to do is that I try to report, you know, I try to kind of be as honest and accurate as I can be with those players and just let the viewers, you know, kind of do what they're going to do with it. It's just my job to be like a conduit for that information.
Yeah, I think in just that approach, I think that approach has made me think a lot recently. I think of like maybe like we're talking about all the information like that we're able to gather and things, you know, baseball being like that, obsessed about data and information. But there's also stuff that seems to be slipping away, you know, because there's less storytellers like out of the Negro League tradition. So when I was a kid, you know, I wrote to Cool Papa Bell and I got his autograph. Like he was going blind. His sight was going in and out. And when his sight was in, Cool Papa Bell is writing to me and my brother, two white boys out in Rhode Island, sending us the autograph. And we you know, we have that. But as I've thought about some of those experiences in my childhood and some of the interactions or meeting players and things like that, baseball history is one thing, history as a whole, like things seem to be kind of slipping away at a time we're kind of like overwhelmed. And I guess what I'm pointing to is like my appreciation maybe right now for your approach of maybe, you know, seen it for how it was and how it looked like. There's something attractive about that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It,
nowadays, it seems, I don't know. It's kind of a sense that I have. I got a question, Greg, that I've been asking guests lately, and it has to do. Well, let me ask the question.
Sure.
What do you think your art is? And what do you think other people think your art is?
Oh, wow. What do I think my art is? Okay. What do you mean? What do I think it is? Or is that up to me to decide?
No. The idea is like to bring in a great question. It's to bring in intent, right? Like the intent of like what you're trying to do. And the way I look at this question has to do with like, I have an intent towards it. And then if I'm putting it out there, people are like talking about it this way or that way, or it just, you feel there, it has a life of its own that's not connected to you. I'm guessing maybe though, you feel like a little bit more of a closer connection with you, the intent of what you're trying to put out with your art and what, how people are receiving it. And right. that's a good thing, but I don't want to answer it for you. So,
right. well, I mean, you know, the intent, I might've mentioned this phrase before. So excuse me if I'm repeating myself, but I think giving people, you know, a window to kind of peer into the past, I think that's kind of the intent. From what people tell me or from what I see, you know, on social, or I guess, you know, people who are into my work enough where they want to, you know, hang it in their homes if they want to own it. I like to think that I guess I'm doing an okay job. It's hard for me to kind of accept that I'm doing an okay job. And this might sound crazy, but you know, I'm very much a perfectionist, and you know, being, I guess, you know, a student of art, it's like I know about all of these other artists who, you know, have been dead for however long they've been dead for, but you know, people who I admire who are absolute beasts, you know, like giants in the field for whatever reason. And I just know that, you know, on an artistic, technical level, or even kind of conceptual level, I could never touch where they are. You know, I couldn't wash their brushes, I like to say. And I'm kind of uber critical of all the stuff that I do. And I always kind of want to get better, and I always try to get better, but still it's like the end result, it's, and you know, maybe this is because, maybe it's because I create it. It's just, the end result is just not good enough, if that makes sense. Just, it doesn't, like, if people think that these paintings are kind of, you know, transporting them back to an earlier time, and they think that that's really effective, I usually think that I've failed in doing that in some way. I mean, that's also, you know, part of my own, like I said, you know, obsessive nature and the fact that
the drive,
neurotic.
well, and the nervous drive. I mean, the dynamic you describe, I'm very familiar with it. It's this nervous drive of whether it's towards perfection or towards doing it right or towards doing it better or towards absolutely making that portal the right way.
Yeah,
that nervous energy, you know, can keep you going. And I talk to a lot of artists about that. And with the nature of the question, which is, you know, is an odd little question, but I'll tell you, like, you know, I've asked it and folks be like, look, I make my art. I don't give a crap what anybody thinks. Like, you know, or others are like, they're like so compelled on, like, I am an artist. I have to put out stuff. People seem to enjoy it, whatever. And they're just like this, you know, like putting out art and everybody likes it. And other folks could be like, here's what I'm trying to do. And I haven't talked to one person in 5 years who understood at all, what I, you know, and, you know, so I think it's also in a certain sense, not to problematize, but also recognize that you put something out there, then you get kind of given it away a little bit and people start to, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're giving people a part of yourself, in a way. And it's so weird, you know, being an artist or just being a creative or whatever, because everybody just has a different way of doing whatever it is that they're doing. And everybody thinks of it differently than the other person. And, you know, for me, it's like, I love doing what I'm doing. I love doing these paintings of baseball players. You know, it's my passion. It's what I have to do it. Like, I, you know, when I don't do it, I know that things aren't right. And I feel like a failure or whatever. It's like, I feel good when I'm working.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, I'm also like, oh God, this painting is garbage, you know, because it doesn't look like a Rockwell, or it doesn't look like, you know, a John Singer Sargent painting or whatever. And sometimes, you know, you mentioned the thing about like not, you know, being able to talk about it to anyone for 5 years. Sometimes I feel the same thing because I don't, like, I have a few artist friends, but I don't have many. And it's like when I get to, you know, hang out with them, I feel like we get to speak a language that I can't speak with other people.
Sure.
So you get to flesh things out with them. You get to talk about, you know, qualities of, you know, this pigment in this brand of oil paint, as opposed to the same pigment in another brand of oil paint.
Right.
And, you know, and they understand that. They understand those issues. Yeah, man, just being an artist.
They understand those issues, right?
Yeah, it's like, these are really hard, really hard things. Like, oh man, you know, this yellow ochre, when you tint it up with white, it's just too warm. I needed a different brand. You know, do you have a yellow ochre that cools down more when you tint it up? It's just stuff like that just kind of runs through my head all the time.
Hey, hey, Greg, I wanted to ask you, the big question, because I want to make sure, like, uh-oh, I don't forget to ask it, which is, just why is there something rather than nothing? Or is baseball a game of something, or baseball is a game of nothing? I don't know.
Oh, man. Wow. That's a really hard question, too. I mean, you know, the game, baseball is... you know, it's us, it's humans, you know, it's us doing what we do, playing games. I mean, the idea of playing a game with a ball or batting a ball has been around, you know, since, you know, at least ancient Egyptian times. It's like, for some people, it's kind of a life and death or life or death thing. But at the same time, it's just a game. And in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean anything. So it's weird. I feel like it can straddle both sides in a way, in that, you know, you look at the history of the game and you kind of see how it parallels like the history of our country. You know, you see the parallels of, you know, the rise of different cities and how that mimics the rise of teams in those cities, and, you know, the integration of baseball kind of being, you know, the precursor to the civil rights movement. You know, the idea of labor, you know, labor disputes, you know, among workers and management, you know, that's a part of baseball too. I guess it's both everything and, you know, again, nothing, because it's the game. Yeah. So,
no, yeah. I know one of the things I find, and I brought up in the baseball episodes before, when I have some guests who, you know, are involved in baseball, is, you know, the kind of idea of like the American frustration with the wrong approach of expecting baseball to be like fast or something that it's just not.
Yeah.
It's structurally not set up to be something that American consumers need right now. But, you know, so there's this tension, but there also the different type of approach that you might see in Japanese baseball, or a different way of interacting with it, where I've read books about kind of philosophy of like, of Taoism, of like, there is really not that much going on, right? All the downtime, all the hanging out before the game, after game, batting practice, and then, you know, a few moments of this and that, you know, happen. And so there's it's kind of like how you go to the game and what you expect from it is going to affect your experience, because if you're expecting something, you might not be getting as much something as you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's a thing that I think baseball is having a real problem with now, you know, just as you've mentioned. You know, the pace of the game is such a big turnoff to a lot of people. And, you know, the excitement of, say, football or basketball, that's not baseball. I think baseball is even more exciting than those games, but it's not exciting in the same way. So I think that, yeah, it kind of depends on the person and what it is that they want from the game. And, you know, nowadays, you know, the way that media is disseminated, you know, everything is quick. And it's like a world filled with nothing but sound bites. And baseball is a leisurely game. So
yeah, it's definitely,
doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe that's why it's so exciting, because of those tensions. I find it exciting because of those tensions, because there's tons of baseball history like I don't like, because it's steeped in some, you know, highly problematic like American history. And there's other parts that I think are just, you know, fantastic, entertaining, what I did when I was a kid, whatever. Right. The stories are intriguing. And for me, with numbers, my head's always calculating numbers. So that attracts people to baseball, because you can figure out batting averages in your head. You know the drill. So Greg, I wanted to let the audience know, like, how to come in contact with you, like where to find your stuff. I know, I saw depictions of your work, you know, on Instagram, some social media. I know they've been collected in books of sort, but could you tell us about, you know, tell the listeners how to, you know, get in contact, how to find your stuff?
Well, I mean, I have a website, which is basically, the main landing point, I guess, for my work, which is just gregkreinler.com. Basically, if you can spell my name or spell it approximately correctly, then you can find it. But it's, you know, GREIGKREINDLER. And, you know, if you find me, you can find me on social, pretty much on every major platform, on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I haven't gotten into TikTok yet. I don't know if that's going to happen, but
there's always a chance. There's always a chance for it to happen.
There's always a chance. I won't rule it out.
Good. But that's the approach. Yeah,
as long as you have a computer and you can, you know, kind of spell my name right, you can find me somewhere, I think. Hopefully in, you know, not a too compromising position, but
it's no, and thanks for laying that out there. You know, as I mentioned, I saw the paintings you've done, and they're striking. They're also connected to, you know, a game I love, and players to honestly being. I asked you the question about the Negro Leagues, players being lifted up, heroes in my head when I was a kid, and I read about them, and you know, classic stuff like the Red Sox. I grew up watching the Red Sox, and grew up in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, where the AAA team was. So it was around me a lot. And I just want to tell you, I really appreciate your painting and what you create in your art, but also the ability for me to kind of like connect to it that way for a love of the game that I have, and to, you know, get into that universe, because it's a nice one to go into and spend some time, right?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I used to say that, like, the goal of connecting baseball and art was kind of, you know, paramount, you know, just the idea that art doesn't necessarily have to be about, you know, elevated subject matter. It doesn't have to be super conceptual. It can just be, you know, a reflection about a reflection of us and what we do, and baseball is something that we do. So yeah. I guess that's what's appealing to me about it.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Greg. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you, and you know, I know you've done a lot of great paintings. I'll be strolling, you know, thumbing through a lot of the ones I haven't seen, and look forward to what you know, the great stuff that you put out. Thanks so much for visiting the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Ken. I had a lot of fun.
All right, great. Take care, Greg.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.